Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
I'm not surprised that Mr. Trump found Norman Vincent Peale's sermons memorable and substantial, because nothing that he has said has been any more memorable or substantial.
If there isn't a real death on the cross for our sins and a real resurrection to show that death is overwhelmed in victory, then forget it. There is no point in messing with Christian faith whatsoever. Go and join the Rotary Club.
Adam and Eve ate the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now there's a better tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the tree of the cross. And we eat the fruit of that tree. We receive our Lord in the Lord's Supper.
Indiana Truck Drivers Club issues, etc.
There's no doubt that there has been a revolution, not only technological, but I think philosophical and in a lot of ways educational, in American news, both print news and broadcast journalism. The man who produces this program, Jeff Schwarz, is a graduate from one of the most prestigious journalism schools in the United States, and he watches these things very closely. And he says it's frustrating as a professional journalist to turn on the television and watch that 24 news cycle, or to see what's being written, how it's being written, what's being covered. So there's no doubt that a revolution is still underway in the way that we both procure and consume our news. What about religion news? Those trends that have affected journalism and news consumption over the last 25, 30 years, how have they affected our religion news? We're going to be answering that question here with Terry Mattingly here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Thursday afternoon, the 7th of April. After our conversation with Terry, Dr. Cameron McKenzie will join us. We're going to talk about Calvinism, Lutheranism, and God's Law. Pastor Ted Giese will be our guest to review that movie, God's Not Dead 2, a movie that perhaps has a great subject, but is mediocre in its film quality? Not the quality of the cinematography, but maybe just the quality of the movie. Why can't Christians make better movies? Then we'll talk Christ in the Old Testament, Isaiah 65, Judgment and Salvation with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. You can join us for the next 2 hours of the program. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. Our beloved on-demand listeners, anytime, any place you listen, use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about trends in print and online religion news and commentary, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here. I'm in Washington, D.C. at the moment.
Now, we're going to discuss the trends in religion news. What trend or trends stand out to you the most, good or bad?
Okay, well, let's back up for 1 second. The bigger trend, the one that I have dedicated my whole professional life to, is the fact that the press tends to not want to cover religion at all. Long ago, when I was doing my graduate work at the University of Illinois, I talked to a bunch of editors about this question. And basically, I heard over and over two reasons why people didn't want to cover religion. Number one was that religion is too boring. And number two is that religion is too controversial. That means there's all these boring, controversial stories out there, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, personally, I don't know if anybody would ever make the statement today that religion is too boring. But that's certainly not after 9/11 and whatever else has happened in our world. So anyway, you have that trend. P- people just haven't wanted to deal with religion because they don't consider religion real. So if you do cover religion, that means you should cover it when it deals with real subjects. This is very familiar territory to our listeners if they, you know, if they've tuned in to many of these podcasts. And the realest thing in the world of journalism is politics, which means religion is important to the degree that it resembles politics. So we were waiting for a major statement to come out from Pope Francis on the family, and it will be covered essentially as saying whatever is in that document about certain issues that we think of as political culture war issues, that will be the headlines because politics is real. But I think the if I was going to pick one topic right now, and the one I tried to focus on kind of in an indirect way in my column this week for the Universal Syndicate, and that's this whole deal that in the internet age with digital advertisements that drive you crazy and falling budgets and whatever else, the simple fact of the matter is that it is much cheaper to hire people to write a bunch of opinion pieces and put them online and in Twitter than it is to hire a seasoned, experienced professional journalist and have her go out and cover lots of actual news stories about religion, quoting real people and putting this information on the record. Now, this is happening with a lot of topics in American life other than religion. But religion is what we're talking about here today, and this information is expensive, opinion is cheap, so let's have lots and lots and lots of opinion. That's the biggest and most disturbing trend to me. It also implies that everything in religion is essentially a matter of opinion, and that's a profound statement about what's real, what isn't real. Beliefs and their history and their sacraments and their doctrines, whether any of that needs to be taken seriously, the answer is clearly no, if it's all just opinion.
Let's talk a little bit about that kind of the malady that you just examined here. How much of that is driven by cost? Obviously, much of it, because it is expensive. Newspapers are expensive. Magazines are expensive. I was watching the News Hour on PBS the other night, and that's got to be a very expensive thing to produce. They go in depth. Mm-hmm. They send real reporters to talk to real people with actual microphones in their hands and things like that. They do interviews. You know, a 5-minute piece on that on that news show probably takes at least a week from beginning to end to produce there. So that's got to cost a lot of money. But what about the fact that we've got to fill, both online and on television now, cable news, 24 hours, 365 days a year, and it will never stop?
Yeah, how do you fill that up? I mean, the internet never clicks off. How do you keep filling it up? The great Catholic reporter, Catholic subject reporter, John L. Allen, who I interviewed in my column this week, he says, the simple reality is, do you have enough energy and enough people to feed the beast? And the beast is that website. It has to be updated constantly. It has to be pushed constantly out into social media for people to be able to figure out what you're doing. So right at a time when our newspaper and newsroom staffs are getting smaller because of the business crisis linked to digital advertising not working, we actually have staff members who are being asked to produce far more material than in the past. There's a quote that I didn't get to use in the column for lack of space, but I can repeat it here. John said that back when he worked at the National Catholic Reporter, and it came out like every week or two, he said, so I would end up doing a story about what's every week or 2 weeks or something like that. And he said, back then that felt like work. He said, today that would feel like going to the hospital, you know, compared to the pace he has to write at. So if you have all that space to fill, what do you do? Well, you don't do things that are expensive if you have low budgets, thus you have opinion. The other thing is the Internet does lots and lots of things very well, but I don't think that there is anything the Internet does better than make it possible to produce information that divides readers into very narrowly defined interest groups and niches. And that is promoted by opinion as well. The Internet is pushing us toward a kind of aggressive, edgy advocacy journalism style, which makes it hard to do stories where you try to treat both sides of a tense argument with respect and accuracy.
Is part of it also, and to speak here about the Internet, is part of it also the fact that it also allows maximum interaction? If it's permitted, you kind of either open the door all the way or you shut the door and lock it behind you. You cannot pay a staff person to moderate comments all the time.
Right.
And so the line between the reaction and the actual news, if there is any news beyond opinion there, really gets blurred.
It does. But you know what? To everyone's surprise, that hasn't ended up being the crucial issue. The crucial issue, because the success of your website depends on it, is whether your pieces are passed on by folks in social media, whether in the best case scenario they, quote, go viral, unquote. And all of a sudden people are sharing them on Facebook, they're sharing them on Twitter, they're retweeting them on Twitter, and posting them on their web blogs and all this stuff. And now you've got more readers, which is what everybody has to have, because to get eyeballs on your screen and on your advertisements and whatever, you've got to drive those numbers up. But stop and think about it. How often do you forward things that you really, really like and you really, really agree with versus how often do you forward things that you think are really bad, boring, or that you don't agree with them very much?
So what does that do? What does that create, that trend?
So it means that you have a tendency to try to please a certain community of readers that you know are there for your site, and you have to keep them clicking that mouse to get that material out into the public. The last quote of my column this week from John Allen, I love the way he stated it. The piece ends, "While producing truly independent and well-sourced reporting is and always will be much more expensive," than the quote from Allen. Quote, "It is our delusional conviction," said Allen, "that we can keep covering Catholic news for readers who are pro-information and don't want to settle for an approach that polarizes everything that happens."
So talk about the Crux Project. What is it, and why is it so important?
It was really important because it was a brand new religion news product and project sponsored by a major mainstream publication, in this case, the Boston Globe. They went out and they hired very skilled professionals at covering Catholic news. They put together this team and they created a website that was going to lead the world in independent mainstream news, Catholic reporting. Now, it's got commentary on it, it's got movie reviews on it and whatever, but it was clear from day one that Crux was going to be driven by actual news reporting. Now, to understand why Crux is important, let me flip around to you with a question. Where do most members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod get information about what's going on in the Synod?
Oh, that's a really good question, because if you would have asked me that question 25 years ago, I would have said through the official news organs of the church. There's a newspaper and there's a magazine, but I don't think that's true anymore.
Okay, but let's assume for a second, before we get into the present, let's look at the past. Now, would you consider that magazine and news service from the Synod, would you have considered that hard, independently reported news, or would you consider it a form of public relations?
Oh, it was PR. Always has been, always will be.
Yeah. In my own life, there was a crucial moment for this. When I graduated Baylor, and before I went to grad school, I took a few job interviews, and one of them is my father was a very prominent Baptist pastor in Texas, and everybody thought I should go to work for Baptist Press. So I went up and did an interview with Baptist Press and was sitting there with an editor, and I had come to this interview to ask one question. There was one question just burning in my mind that I had to have an answer to. So we sat down with two Dr. Peppers and we're talking, and before I could ask my question, he said to me, "Terry, before we really get going, I have to ask you a question. Do you think what we do is public relations or news?" And I said, "Sir, that's what I came to Nashville to ask you. That's the exact question I need answered." And he said, "Well, sorry, I asked you first." So I thought about it a long time, and I said, "I think that you think what you're writing is news, and that the people who sign your paycheck thinks it's public relations."
What did he say to that?
And he said, "Exactly." And I said, "No, sir, I can't." So I knew at that point I was never going to go into the denominational press. Now, what's happened today is you still have the semi-public relations of the denominational presses, and some of what they do, frankly, is very good. There's a liberal Baptist wire service and a conservative one, and if you read both of them, you find out a lot about what's going on in the U.S. Supreme Court. But what's really happened, though, is we now have legions of weblogs by pastors and activists and all kinds of things that write about what's going on. It might be the worship wars among Missouri Synod. It might be the worship wars among Reformed Jews. It doesn't really matter what the denomination is. You've got certain subjects that get people riled up, whether it's sexual or liturgical or ordination of women or whatever. And these sites take whatever happens in their niches and begin pumping out information about it, right? But it's information that's primarily opinion. And very rarely do you see them quoting people on the record in ways that tell you that they probably really did interview them and treated them fairly, or they don't link to the, maybe they don't link to the. And this is this new world of very inexpensive opinion information. And this now, I think, dominates the world of religion. So Crux was important, because it came along and said, no, there's a lot of them out there. There's a lot of Catholic wire services. There's a lot of magazines. This is going to be a mainstream news organization focusing on Catholicism.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We'll take a break here on this Thursday afternoon, April the 7th. We're talking about trends in print and online religion news and commentary. We'll come back with him. We'll have about another 10 minutes. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. He's founder and editor of GetReligion.org.
Would you like to help a college or seminary student attend the Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference? You can purchase a conference scholarship for a contribution of $100 to Issues, Etc. You can donate online at issuesetc.org/scholarship. Or you can make your $100 check payable to Issues, Etc. Write Scholarship in the memo line and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
Even if your child has mild to moderate autism, learning disabilities, attention difficulties, or other learning challenges, he can receive a classical Christian education. The Simply Classical curriculum was created by Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope, an author, educator with a master's degree in special education, and homeschooling mother of twins with special needs. The Simply Classical curriculum has become an answer to prayer for parents and schools. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 with the coupon code LPR.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues, Etc. Jesus Christ.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is a story about one man's journey from death row executioner to Lutheran pastor. It's titled The Executioner's Redemption, My Story of Violence, Death, and Saving Grace. You can check it out at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Executioner's Redemption is on sale for $12.99. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, The Executioner's Redemption. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, founder and editor of GetReligion.org. We're talking about trends in print and online religion news and commentary. Terry, you still watch print, and a lot of people still do, obviously, but far fewer than used to, because it used to be the only medium that could bring this kind of daily or at least weekly kind of coverage of news. Where is print going on account of all of this?
Well, ironically, print newsrooms, or predominantly print newsrooms, are still producing most of the information that goes out into public discourse in the way of news. That's still overwhelming. It's about 60% the size of an industry as it used to be, but lots of information, especially in middle America. When you get into New York and you get into Washington, D.C., you still have, you know, the big dominant newspapers like the Washington Post and the New York Times, but then you have all the other publications as well. I think Washington currently has something like 6 or 7 publications or websites that cover politics full time. That's a lot of competition, but a lot of those websites are coming from distinct editorial and advocacy points of view. When you apply this back over, like you and I were talking to a second ago with Crux, when Crux lasted for 18 months, they recently announced that the Boston Globe was cutting off the money. And everybody thought they would vanish, but they came back with a smaller staff, and they signed an agreement with the Catholic organization, the Knights of Columbus, a very conservative reputation, and immediately liberal Catholic groups screamed protest that Crux had been taken over by conservative Catholics. But John Allen, in several articles on their site and also in the interview with me, he stressed that they went into this in a written legal agreement with the Knights of Columbus that he has editorial independence for his website. They cannot designate what he writes, how he covers things. And so what we have here now is a kind of very important hybrid. It's like committed mainstream journalist, yet backed by a religious nonprofit that, for whatever reasons, has chosen to support the independent reporting of news. I don't know how we can get listeners to realize how important that is. Just to give you, once again, to put it in Lutheran terms, what would happen if someone came along with a grant and they gave Mark and Molly Hemingway their own publication to cover Lutheran affairs in America and gave them total editorial independence? Would that be an important event among Lutherans?
It would be very important, yes.
Okay. Now, there would still be people who would doubt their point of view or might argue with individual stories, but no one would doubt that this was an important source of on-the-record information. That's why Crux matters. Will it succeed now? I don't know. But when you're dealing with the top reporter in the world on matters of Catholic affairs, it certainly has to be taken seriously. And if you care about the future of religion writing, you have got to care about this experiment, because we're going to see more of these hybrid-type publications in the future, because right now advertising, the old formula of subscriptions and advertisements paying for the news, that's not working, because digital advertisements don't work. This column was also very important to me, For the simple reason that once a year I write a column about trends in religion writing, and I do it on the anniversary of my column. And this column this week on Crux marks the end of my 28th year writing this column for the On Religion column, first for Scripps Howard and now for the Universal Syndicate. So this is a topic that's extremely important to me, and I would recommend that readers look up this column. It's out in publications. It'll be at my own website, tmat.net, next Monday when the rights return to me. But we'll see if we can get a link up at Get Religion in the next day or so as well, and I can send you that link as well.
What's the future? I'm just thinking about some print publications for Christianity that cover religion almost exclusively. Christianity Today, obviously, that's going to be the gorilla in the room, if I'm not mistaken. That's kind of Billy Graham's brainchild. The Christian Post, Christian Science Monitor.
Right.
Then you got others that are, I was thinking Catholic Register and a couple other Catholic newspapers that cover religion in general.
Right.
What's the future for these?
Now, almost every single one of them, including Christianity Today, is actually a nonprofit group, which means to some degree they're already a hybrid. They're already existing with their advertisements and then with grants and other funds that they raise for their nonprofit to exist, or they have become a nonprofit to kind of lower their costs of operation. So this is really the direction things are going. And, of course, the whole issue is, can they move into a new generation and maintain readers? Or will they, like many mainline churches or whatever, will they in effect die out with the generation that they currently have? That's an issue facing all media right now, not just the religion publications. I like to compare this to Rolling Stone. The editors at Rolling Stone face a very interesting dilemma. Do you continue to put young, hip, edgy rappers and stuff on the front page of your magazine, even though young people don't purchase magazines and don't read them as much? Or do you continue to put Jackson Brown and Joan Baez and Bob Dylan and, you know, The Who and Rolling Stones, do you put these people who are now geriatric, do you continue to put them on the cover to appeal to the strong readers you have who are willing to pay for the magazine? Which do you pick? Ticking off the only readers you have that are willing to pay for your product, or making happy the young ones who don't want to pay for your product and won't pay attention unless it's specifically addressing them? That is not an easy choice, and almost every single publication in America faces that dichotomy right now, including Christianity Today and similar religious publications.
Can you give me the 28-year journalists covering the religion beat perspective on aggregate blogs like Patheos and others that kind of generally bring together opinion, news, ideas on religion?
Well, see, the deal is that Patheos is not a blog. It's a website. Dozens and dozens of silos, they're called, to appeal to very narrow interest groups. You don't get, I mean, if you've got a blog like they do, last time I checked, for feminist Mormons, that's a pretty narrow niche. But if a feminist Mormon wants to publish something or wants to read, they know where to go, right? Well, dozens of similar, very narrowly defined niches, because that's what the internet does well. Now, if you're going to run that website for feminist Mormons and you want to keep your readers coming back, are you going to make your material very broadly based and include lots of other points of view and link the interviews with conservative traditional Mormon women and all that? No, that wouldn't make your readers happy, would it? So you're going to hold to that narrow editorial vision. And increasingly, that's our big problem. We all live in our little silos.
One last question for you, Terry, and this may just call upon you to kind of, speak to the best of your memory, and that is, what major newspapers still have a thriving religion desk?
Pittsburgh. The newspaper in Pittsburgh has, through the years, I'm forgetting the exact name right now because there's still two newspapers in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has always been known as a town for great religion writing. The Los Angeles Times used to be fantastic. Now they don't hardly have anybody on the beat at all. You would have to take the Washington Post seriously. They have several folks that cover religion there full time. The Associated Press still has a writer or two that focus on it. Obviously, we have Religion News Service, which offers waves of commentary now, but within that product still has some people who cover hard news. So the market is still out there, but we had about 10 years ago, we had a flurry where we had excellent religion reporting going on at National Public Radio. There was a career of the late Peter Jennings, where there was a full-time religion reporter at ABC World News Tonight, and her pieces were drawing record reactions from viewers. Well, then along came the advertising and the business crunch crisis, and things aren't looking up as good today, and it seems like most of the action has gone to this world of information opinion, and that's the subject of my column this week, and I find that very disturbing.
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Very glad to be here.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking about Calvinism and Lutheranism and God's law, comparing and contrasting those two streams of the Reformation on the subject of God's law. There's some similarity. There's also some real difference. Dr. Cameron McKenzie of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator for stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship, lcms.org/stewardship.
The Lord has gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. These gifts can be received every week at both Grace Lutheran Church and Trinity Lutheran Church in Wichita, Kansas. Join us for divine services at Grace on Sundays at 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m., as well as every Wednesday at 11 a.m., or at Trinity every Sunday at 11 a.m. Grace is located at 3310 East Pawnee and Trinity at 611 South Erie. Gather with us around our Lord and His giving His gifts to us. See you soon.
The 27th Annual Congress on the Lutheran Confessions, sponsored by the ACL and Luther Academy, is April 6th through the 8th in Bloomington, Minnesota. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission will present two seminars. On Tuesday, April 5th, Pastor Rob Jarvis offers an overview of the Reformation and our confessions. On Wednesday, April 6th, Pastor Jeremiah Johnson presents Catechesis Begins in the Home, Practical Ways to Pass on the Faith to Our Children. Learn more at theclcc.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Our Savior Lutheran, Westminster, Massachusetts. Redeemer Lutheran, Fairhope, Alabama. St. Matthew Lutheran, Stony Plain, Alberta, Canada. Holy Cross Lutheran, Moline, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Munster, Indiana. St. John Lutheran, Racine, Wisconsin. Calvary Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Reformation Lutheran, Afton, Missouri. Emmanuel Lutheran, Lima, Ohio. Risen Lord Lutheran, Taylorsville, Kentucky, Prince of Peace Lutheran, Crystal Lake, Illinois, and Trinity Lutheran, Elmore, Ohio. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes a congregational sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. Journal, the Issues Etc. 300.